Hello, this is Hannah Solomon, speaking from Rauner Library at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire, and I am currently speaking with Dr. Donna Strauss, who is calling in from London, correct?
Yes.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today. To start off, I'd like to hear, just establish some biographical context. Can you tell me where you're from?
Well, I was born in South Africa, 1934. I left South Africa when I was a 20-year-old student. I didn't want to live under apartheid. After that, I was a graduate student, first in Cambridge and then in Paris. After getting my PhD, I had a post at the University of London. In London, I met my husband, Ed Strauss, who was an American, is an American, and we got married, and it was the dream of his life to live on a farm in Vermont. So we moved to the States and managed to buy a small farm in Vermont. I became a member of the mathematics department in Dartmouth. Ed taught at a community college in the area called Canaan College. It was 1966 that I joined the Dartmouth faculty, and the Vietnam War was being waged at that time at enormous human cost. It eventually cost the lives of 50,000 young American soldiers and millions of Vietnamese. To no purpose, it had become clear that it was a war that was not going to be won. And there was a protest movement against the war that was gathering momentum and was particularly evident on the campuses where students Right. were involved in protests against the war. My husband and I... Sorry?
If you don't mind, I'd like to go back quickly. I would love to hear some more about your childhood and how you grew up, your family.
All right. My family were Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe to South Africa. And like many Jewish immigrants to South Africa, they lived in the countryside. Both my grandparents had small trading stores in the South African countryside in the Eastern Cape. I grew up in the Eastern Cape, and came to hate racial discrimination, partly because of what I observed in South Africa, and partly because of being Jewish at the time of the Holocaust.
Right.
I became a student at Cape Town University and graduated with a master's degree in mathematics. Is there any more you'd like to know about my childhood?
Excuse me, say that again.
Is there any more you'd like to know about my childhood?
Can you tell me about your parents?
Right. My father was a physicist who became the head of the physics department in Cape Town and was widely respected for as an academic and as an individual, because he was a person of great integrity and dignity. My mother regarded herself as being a housewife. That was a generation when women regarded it as their major duty to look after a husband and children. She was a very warm and loving and very capable person. Everything she did superbly. So, as you can gather, I feel quite proud of my parents. When my father retired, when he turned 65, he and my mother moved to Israel. And one of my brothers was already established there.
So, Judaism played a large role in your home life?
In a sense it did. Neither my mother nor my father were observant Jews. They didn't go to synagogue services or keep kosher. But my father called himself an agnostic. But they were very aware of their Jewish heritage. And they were ardently Zionist, as almost all Jews were who had witnessed the Holocaust. It seemed a necessity to Jews of that generation that there should be a homeland somewhere to which Jewish refugees could go.
And how did they end up in South Africa?
They were opposed to racial discrimination, but and politically they would have called themselves liberal. But they were never really involved in anti-apartheid political activity. I was when I became a student at Cape Town University. I joined a movement, an anti-apartheid movement called the Non-European Unity Movement, which nowadays few people have heard of. It has disappeared, but it had quite a large following, certainly a following numbering in the thousands, perhaps tens of thousands, at the time that I joined it in the 1950s.
And can you tell me a little more about that that environment?
Well,
what it was like?
South Africa was in the grip of apartheid, which was a very ugly system. It meant in your daily life you had to classify yourself by race in everything you did. If you sat down on a park bench, it had to be a bench that was marked whites only. If you went to a post office, you had to go through a door that was marked whites only. And white and non-white people were kept apart in every aspect of life. They had to live in different areas, do different kinds of work. There were laws that forbade black people to become skilled workers. They had to go to different schools and universities. In fact, universities were based on your racial identity. So there were different universities, not just for white and non-white people, but for white people, black people, Indian people, Cape Coloured people. It was a bizarre and ugly system. And is the main reason that I didn't want to live in South Africa.
So what was it like attending university there in that environment for you personally?
Well, when I became a student at Cape Town University, this would have been, let's see, I was only 15 at the time, so this would have been in 1949. Cape Town still had students of all races. There were non-white students at Cape Town University. Not many, not more than 10% of the student body. But for the first time in my life, I was able to have friends of all races. In the next decade, in the 1950s, it became impossible for non-white students to go to Cape Town University. There was a protest march against this of Cape Town University and staff and students, which was in fact led by my father.
Were both your parents involved in this, or was it just your father?
Just my father. I don't think my mother took part. But my mother hated apartheid. She hated it with more emotion, I think, than my father did. My mother and father were quite anxious about the fact that I was moving in circles when I was a student, where some of my friends were non-white. I remember them asking me not to go to a particular party with some of the people would be non-white. They felt I was putting my father's position at Cape Town University in jeopardy. I had a lot of conflict. I didn't like going to the party against my parents' wishes. But I felt it wasn't possible to refuse to associate with people because of their race. I felt that would be a betrayal of everything I believed in.
So how long were you at Cape Town University then?
For 4 years. I completed a master's degree in mathematics. And then I got a scholarship to study at Cambridge. I came to Cambridge and discovered that it was Paris that was the exciting center of the kind of mathematics I was doing. And I'd also discovered I could go and study in Paris and remain registered as a Cambridge student. So I went to Paris, lived there for 2 years. I didn't mention that I had married someone else in the non-European unity movement the same year that I moved to Cambridge. His name was Seymour Papert, and he subsequently became world famous for his work on computers in education. Anyway, we both studied in Cambridge and Paris, both got PhDs in mathematics from Cambridge while studying in Paris, then moved to Geneva, where Seymour was working with Piaget, a very famous figure in the field of child development. During that year, during the year we were in Geneva, our marriage broke down because Seymour fell in love with somebody else. I moved to London, where I had a position in the mathematics department of a college of London University. Seymour moved to America, to MIT. A few years later in London, I met my second husband, Ed Strauss, who is American. And it had been the dream of his life to have a farm in Vermont. So we both moved to America, saved up for a year, and were able to buy a small farm in Vermont.
What year was that?
We moved to America in 1965 and bought our farm the next year in 1966.
So that must have been a big change from South Africa to Europe to Vermont.
Yes, it was. It was indeed. It was a big change, and our farming was very small scale. You couldn't make a living by farming in those days. we made a living from the fact that I had a position in Dartmouth and Ed had a position at a community college. On our farm we had one cow, one animal reared for beef, two sheep, six chickens, and a vegetable patch. And that was it, really.
So at this point,
the work involved on the farm was quite demanding. For example, the cow had to be milked twice a day without fail. And there was also other farm work involved.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes. Yes, I did. It was a new experience. And in some ways quite rewarding. But I was quite glad that I didn't have to do farm work once I'd had my children, because there's no way I could have looked after small children and had a full-time position as an academic and done farm work.
Of course.
So I was quite relieved that that phase of my life had ended before I had children.
So at this point, the Vietnam War had sort of been escalating for a few years now. Had you been keeping up with world news on that aspect? Were you aware of?
Yes. Both Ed and I were very politically aware. Very left-wing, although anti-Stalinist. And we were in the States in 1965 when there was a large demonstration in Washington against the Vietnam War. But have I got the date right? Yeah, I think it must have been 1966. I think it was 1966. There was a large demonstration in Washington against the Vietnam War, which Ed and I both participated in. And at that time, there were just two groups who were involved in protesting against the war, the students on the campuses and the Quakers. So there were two coaches that had been hired to go from Dartmouth to the anti-war demonstration in Washington. One was hired by SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, and the other was hired by the Quakers. And in fact, at that time, we had many friends who were Quakers, because of our anti-war activity. And we often went to Quaker meetings in spite of being Jewish.
Can you tell me about what the experience was like going to that protest in D.C.?
I don't think I have too much to say about it. It was a vast protest. I don't remember the precise numbers involved. Now, I would guess it was in the hundreds of thousands. Ed and I were in the SDS coach with some of our friends and took part in a march. And that's really about all I have to say about it.
Okay. So the 1966, you started working at Dartmouth.
1966, yes.
And I believe, were you one of the only female professors at the time?
There was another female professor, Marianne Brown. Marianne and her husband, Ed, became close friends of ours. But really, that was the only time in my career as a mathematician that I had a colleague who was a woman. It's, in those days, it was unusual for women to be mathematicians.
Can you tell me a bit about the campus climate once you got to Dartmouth?
The campus climate?
The environment, the...
Yes, it was... Coming from England, I was surprised by how cautious people were about stating their political attitudes. When these attitudes were anti-establishment. For example, I would take round petitions against the Vietnam War to ask my colleagues to sign them. And there were lots of people who would sort of whisper to me in a corridor that they agreed with the petition, but they were afraid to sign it. And I was surprised by that. America is supposedly a country where there's freedom of speech, and no one should be afraid of stating what they believe. But unlike Britain, large numbers of academics did not have tenure and were quite fearful about their future position.
So you seem to have taken on a leadership position then as far as the on-campus movement went?
Well, I wouldn't say leadership position, but certainly an activist position. I was certainly actively involved in the anti-war movement. I wouldn't have called myself a leader.
What other types of activities were you involved in then, anti-war activities?
I think it was a dominant activity because that was the dominant issue at the time. The war in Vietnam was a very major issue on the campuses. I don't remember being actively involved in any other issues, although I had Although I had strong left-wing feelings on many issues. But the Vietnam War was certainly the dominant issue.
So in what ways were you involved then in anti-Vietnam activism? What other types of things did you do?
Well, apart from farming and teaching mathematics and doing research in mathematics, I don't think I did much else.
So then 1969 was Parkhurst, correct?
That's right. What happened in 1969 is that a group of students, mainly students in SDS, occupied the admin building. This was a protest against the Vietnam War and against the fact that Dartmouth was actively involved, because Dartmouth had a ROTC program which was training students to join the military and to fight in Vietnam. So we saw Dartmouth as actively involved in the war. And the sit-in was a protest against that involvement, in particular against the ROTC program. Dartmouth reacted very harshly to the sit-in. It called the police. The students involved were arrested and sentenced to 30 days in prison. And this was the first time that a university had reacted so harshly to anti-war protests. It was the first time that a university had called the police and that the protest resulted in prison sentences for the students.
Can you tell me what it was like being a part of that protest, being inside the building?
Well, I wasn't really a part of the protest. But there were two faculty members. The other was a lecturer in the chemistry department called Paul Knapp, and myself, who went into the building during the protest and to tell the students that we supported what they were doing. We had both left before the police arrived. We weren't really part of the protest, although we did support it.
Can you describe the scene?
Well, There were students occupying the admin building, many of them students whom I knew in SDS, and people were talking and discussing and listening to speeches. After the sit-in had ended, Paul Napenda, the two faculty members who had gone in and said that we supported the students, were put on trial by the CAP Committee Advisory to the President. And the outcome of the trial was that we were suspended from our positions for 2 years. At the trial, we were defended by a very well-known lawyer, Kunster. He was the lawyer who defended the Chicago Seven. You might have heard of him. And he came up to Vermont to defend Paul and me. By the way, I've been looking through my files, which I've unearthed for the first time in decades, and discovered that I have a copy of the speech I made at the trial, and I have a copy of a newspaper account of the sitting from the Valley News. And I could scan these and send you copies if you'd like to have them.
That would be wonderful, yes.
Well, I'll do that. I'll do that this evening.
Thank you, wonderful.
Anyway, the decision of the CAP was to suspend us from our positions for 2 years. So Ed and I decided to return to England, and I spent the next, this was in 1969, I spent the next 40 years as a lecturer at the University of Hull in England. And we didn't become seriously involved in political activity although recently Ed has joined a small political group in England called Association for Workers' Liberty. I have not joined.
Once you left Dartmouth, what were your feelings?
About Dartmouth?
Yes.
Well, I felt that Dartmouth had reacted too harshly to the protest. By having students put in prison and by dismissing members of the faculty for doing no more than stating something that they believed. And as I said, this was harsher than the behavior of any other university. Hello?
Yes.
I didn't know if you were still there.
Yes, I'm still here.
Right, because I don't have the recording machine anymore. Is it still on?
Yes, it is still on.
Right. Is there anything else you'd like to know?
Any of your thoughts and feelings about the whole situation? Anything more regarding the war in Vietnam specifically, or the environment on campus, Dartmouth Free Action?
Well, I think the protest movement against the war did achieve something. I believe it was a major factor in ending the war. And it was important to end the war because it was costing so many lives. I didn't feel enthusiastic about the regime that took over in North Vietnam, but I think it was right that the war was ended and that it was right for to want it to end. I was talking to my brothers and sisters-in-law last week, in fact, because we had a family gathering in Israel to celebrate my brother's 80th birthday. And they asked me whether I regretted having taken part, whether I regretted the part I'd played in this demonstration. And I said, no, I didn't regret it. And I didn't feel I could have done anything else. I think it's very important if people feel that something wrong is being done to stand up and say so.
Were you ever disappointed that there wasn't more of a reaction on campus?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Were you ever disappointed that there wasn't more of an anti-war movement in any of the places that you were?
No, I don't think so. I wasn't disappointed that there wasn't a stronger reaction against the war, because there was in fact a strong and widespread reaction. Mm-hmm. And I think this was one of the factors which ended the war. But I do feel disappointed that people don't react more than they do against, well, against suffering being caused to others. This isn't connected with the Vietnam War, but in England at the moment, we have a government that is causing a lot of suffering by attacking the welfare society we have, so that in the last few years people are going hungry. There are people who can only eat because they go to food banks. People are becoming homeless. Child poverty has soared. And I feel there isn't enough reaction to this happening. People should really care more than they do, or appear to.
Do you think maybe that's a result of your upbringing and of your involvement in movements, that maybe your generation was more invested in things that were going on?
I think my generation was more involved than young people are today, because When I became a student, the Second World War had just ended. And we'd seen immense tragedies like the Holocaust. And I belonged to a generation that felt committed to build a better world. And to some extent, we did. To some extent, the welfare states that emerged in Western Europe were built on the basis that nobody should go cold or hungry or without shelter or medical treatment if they needed it. We did create societies based on that principle, which are being undermined at the moment. But I do feel that when I was a student, young people were far more involved in social and political issues than they are today. We don't have the same challenge of having a world to rebuild and to build on a better basis.
Do you think your experience at Dartmouth with being suspended by the administration affected the way that you made decisions when it came to living in London afterwards and to maybe not being as politically active?
No, I don't think so. I didn't see it as having been a catastrophe in my life because I was able to continue working and living comfortably alone in another country. I didn't think of my suspension by Dartmouth as having been a catastrophe for me. And as I said before, I was quite relieved that I didn't have farm work to do when my children were born. And it was in fact the year after, in 1970, that my first child was born.
And do you think that changed the way that maybe that you reflected on how your parents reacted to your actions, or the way that you saw your own actions in retrospect?
I'm sorry, my hearing isn't too brilliant, and I don't always hear what you're asking.
Having children?
Yes.
Did it change your perspective on the way that you had acted in the past?
No, I don't think it did. I didn't ever change my mind about the way I had acted. I didn't ever think that I would have acted, that I should have acted differently. I don't think that having children made a difference. If anything, it made me more convinced that it was right to protest against the war, because once you have children, you realize how horrifying it is that children should suffer.
Do you have any other thoughts on Vietnam or the way it affected your life?
The way it affected my life was that I left the States and came to England, which I haven't really regretted. I've had a good life in England, and so that I don't have any bitter regrets. And I've brought up my children in England, and they've had good lives. I haven't really been involved in political activity since being in England. Not because my political ideas have changed. My political values have remained the same. But I've never found any other group that has exactly the same political values as I do.
Over the course of your life, you lived in many different places during really turbulent times. Did you see notable differences in the ways that people reacted to situations, you know, such as apartheid in South Africa and the Vietnam War in the United States?
The main difference I was aware of is that at American universities, academics seemed more fearful of saying what they believed. If what they believed was in conflict with the establishment. I'd never experienced this in England. I'd never found in England that an academic would say that he believed something but felt fearful about saying so.
How about the student movements?
When we came to England, there was an anti-apartheid student movement in England, a general anti-apartheid movement in England, and a boycott directed against South Africa, which I think did play a role in ending apartheid. And Ed and I, to some extent, were involved in that. In fact, at Hull University in the 1970s, there was a sit-in which was part of an anti-apartheid protest, which Ed and I took part in. But there wasn't the same drama of police being called and staff suspended.
Were you at all involved in the civil rights movement or the Dartmouth move towards co-education when you were on campus?
No, not really. We would have been involved in the civil rights movement because that was something we deeply cared about. Except that during the years we were in the States, from 1965 to 69, it was the anti-Vietnam War movement, which was the major movement, which was absorbing everyone's energies.
Of course.
We would have been involved in the civil rights movement, except that it was taking a backstage then.
But you didn't feel any... I mean... You didn't extensively get involved in the push for co-education when you were at Dartmouth?
It didn't exist at the time.
Okay.
In the 1960s, there was no real movement calling for co-education at Dartmouth. I would have been involved if there had been, because I do believe ardently in rights for women as well as for rights for all people, whatever their race. So, movements for women's rights, or the civil rights movements, are movements that I would ardently support. But I wasn't actually involved in that kind of activity.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Is there anything else you'd like to ask me?
I think we've pretty much gone through it.
Right.
Yes. Well,
Maybe you could send me a copy of what you write up. Would that be possible?
Of course. Yes. I will keep you updated. We have somebody who transcribes the interviews. So when that is ready, I will let you know.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll send you scans of those, of the speech I made at my Dartmouth trial, and of a Valley News article about it.
That would be fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you for taking an interest.
Always. All right.
Bye then.
Have a good night.
You too. Goodbye.